Philippine religious leader Apollo Quiboloy indicted for sex trafficking charges in the United States. Germany's daily COVID-19 infection tally reaches a new record high. And a senator seeking a probe into the allegedly anomalous Malampaya deal of Udena Corporation. Hi, I'm Carmina Constantino. Dateline Philippines begins right now. Hey, thanks for joining us. And for those of you watching us on YouTube and on Facebook, glad you could join us today. Topping the midday news, a religious leader and a known ally of President Rodrigo Duterte indicted in the U.S. for sex trafficking charges. Our North America Bureau correspondent Steve Angeles now joins us with details. Steve, what else can you tell us?
Yes, Carmina. So to give the backstory on this case, in January of 2020, U.S. federal officials raided the Kingdom of Jesus Christ compound in Van Nuys, Southern California, arresting three U.S.-based church leaders, charging them with immigration fraud. The case has now expanded and is including more severe charges that include sex trafficking. The federal officials announced the unsealing of a 42-count superseding indictment on Thursday morning U.S. time, charging more defendants, including the church founder, Pastor Apollo Quiboloy, International Administrator Teresita Talibas Dandan, Feli Salinas, Bettina Padilla Rosas, and Maria De Leon. They have been accused of orchestrating a sex trafficking operation that coerced underage girls and young women to have sex with Quiboloy under threats of eternal damnation. Salinas was arrested in Hawaii, while Rosas and De Leon were arrested in Southern California. The three defendants from the original indictment, Amanda Estopade, Marisa Duenas, and Guia Cabactulan, who were charged with immigration fraud, were eventually released in the past year as their 2020 case continues in the courts. Federal officials originally claimed that the church used an immigration scheme which included at least 82 sham marriages, as well as bogus student visas to bring Philippine-based members to the U.S. who would solicit funds for the Children's Joy Foundation. Authorities claimed the charity scheme raised over $20 million, which went on towards Quiboloy's lavish lifestyle. Members who did not meet quotas or attempted to leave the church were then punished. Since the January raid, alleged victims living in the Kingdom of Jesus compound have been under the care of local victims assistance programs, and several Kingdom of Jesus locations have also since closed down during the pandemic. However, it is unclear if it was due to the pandemic's ban on religious gatherings or if it had anything to do with this case. However, the main headquarters is still operational. Carmina?
All right, Steve, let's talk more about this case. First of all, I want you to tell us, how big is this? The fact that Quiboloy has been named as one of the perpetrators of sex crimes against children. When you read through the documents, it's very clear he took part in it.
Yes, it was very lengthy. I mean, I believe from what I saw in the documents that he was the one mainly having sex with the underage children, and all the other defendants were somehow orchestrating it or, you know, using different... Each person had a role in this grand scheme, and these are only nine people charged so far. Was, of course, Quiboloy, the founder of the church, having sex with these underage children and threatening them with leaving. It's actually a very graphic indictment if you go through this very, very long document.
In fact, Steve, I want to remind our viewers that some of the details that we're going to talk about today, stemming, of course, from the indictment, is quite sensitive. So if you're going to listen to this, we advise you to take caution because, you know, this is quite sensitive what we're going to talk about. In fact, in one portion of the indictment, Steve, it was detailed there as to how the pastorals or personal assistants were lured into having sex with Quiboloy. Is that correct?
Yes, the night duty talked about some of the recruitment processes, some of the way they actually divided the night duty among them, and just some of the punishments that would happen if they refused it, and included a lot of public shaming in front of the congregation. And that is a common theme within both indictments, whether it was the charity issue or this night duty issue, was a lot of public shaming if anyone tried to leave or speak up or even just defy some of these requests.
Mm. Of course, Steve, these are all allegations at this point, but talk to us about if Kiboloy will be asked to go to the United States to face these grave allegations against him?
Right now, the federal officials have told me that they cannot comment on whether or not he's going to be extradited. For now, they have arrested three people. We could probably expect the original three defendants to come back to court soon to face this new superseding indictment. But they want to say if there will be any extraditions or anything of that nature for the Philippine-based people. I actually just got word from the U.S. Department of Justice that Kiboloy does apparently have a legal representation based in the U.S. And of course, as we know, just about a year and four months ago, he did, he faced that one kind of a similar allegations back home in Davao. And he was, he didn't get charged for that one about the rape allegations as well.
Steve, talk to us about, a while ago you said that some of the victims are now under custody. They're being taken care of by a foundation, am I correct? An organization?
I mean, they won't go into too much details. They're still trying to protect the victims. And actually, the Justice Department has not even said exactly how many people they supposedly rescued or how many victims they've recovered. But they do assure that they have been getting taken care of. They are still continuing to ask people if they're former church members to come forward, if they have any information or if they themselves are victims. And from the first raid, they had this offer that anyone that would come to them, they would give them assistance and just trying to help them get back on their feet. Of course, the first raid, the first indictment actually happened about a month before the COVID-19 pandemic took over. So they're hoping maybe they can find some people to come out and possibly eventually testify as this case progresses.
I want to take a moment now, Steve, to tell our viewers that we did reach out to Pastor Kiboloy's legal counsel, and he did tell us that they will not be granting any interviews for now until an official statement is released. So I just want to let our viewers know that we've also reached out to the pastor's camp to react to this breaking news. If you've just tuned in, top story today, of course, Steve, is that Pastor Kiboloy has been indicted for sex trafficking in the United States. So having said that, Steve, tell us about how the United States really sees sex trafficking crimes and sex crimes against children. How serious are they when you talk about prosecution of these kinds of crimes?
Yes, the U.S. prosecutors, they are very serious when it comes to any crimes against children, especially sex trafficking, especially child rape. This case, according to their release, actually carries a minimum of 15 years to life in prison. So they are very serious about this. Time and time again, we hear stories of Americans being arrested and being charged and convicted for even just having illicit communications with children. We hear a lot of child pornography cases, and those carry pretty hefty sentences of at least 10 years. So what more of an actual physical abuse allegations that involved rape, that involved almost a public shaming in a way, and even threats. I don't recall seeing the indictment get into any physical threats when it came to the so-called night duty. So you can only imagine that, you know, if someone with child porn from the Philippines gets 10 to 15 years of prison, three child abuse victims, that is definitely gonna, you know, the penalties are looking very steep in this case. We also don't know if other people might eventually show up. Maybe these three are possibly just the first if this is an ongoing thing. Because remember, they said there are at least 82 sham marriages. Not sure how many bogus student visas there were. And this is a huge church, so we don't know what other allegations can come out of former members.
And talking about how huge this church is, do we have any idea as to how many satellite churches they have and how many have closed down? As you said a while ago, some have closed down. You don't know why, if it has to do with these allegations, Steve. But do you have a ballpark figure as to how many churches there are across the United States?
I was only familiar with two of the branches, the branches closest to us over here in LA, but my understanding, there are quite a bit, and they're spread out. Keep in mind, also, the indictment does say that Kibaloy had properties in Hawaii, as well, Los Angeles, as well as Las Vegas. So, I mean, safe to say that there are some churches there. There are probably some members there. Estepar was actually apprehended in Virginia. So he does have quite a reach, especially, I mean, he's a celebrity pastor back home and different congregations. You know how Filipinos, we kind of just spread ourselves throughout the country. So it wouldn't be surprising to see if he had at least one or two locations, if not members, in every corner of the United States.
And no matter how many branches there are, Steve, do we know for sure that the FBI is working towards getting to those branches, really furthering their investigation and seeing if there are any more victims out there?
Yes, they're really digging deep into this case. They've actually been digging deep since, I believe, 2014 is when they first launched the investigation. So from 2014, about 6 years later, is when they raided the compound. And now about a little less than 2 years later, they've got, you know, these this new indictment coming out. So we might see more charges coming out, or might see more names surfacing as we progress.
Steve, a while ago, you also said that as far as human trafficking and sex crimes against children are concerned, that the U.S. really takes this seriously. But because they do that, because they do take these things seriously, do you have any idea as to how swiftly this can go and how soon people can expect any resolution to this case?
So from experience, from what I've seen, just in the U.S. court system, federal cases do tend to take quite a while, at least 1 to 2 years worth of prosecutions and just legal proceedings, especially considering who Pastor Kibaloy is and how many people are involved. So I wouldn't be surprised if this case does take a little longer than the usual sex crime or the usual child abuse crime, just, you know, based on who we're dealing with right now, how many people are involved. I'm sure they're going to take some time also to look for victims and really build that case against them. Of course, Kibaloy will also be, you know, doing what he's going to do and defend himself and probably still talk to his followers. And I'm sure their FBI is going to be looking into some of the followers as well, whether they're active or former members.
Steve, one of the allegations mentioned as well that sort of plays into this grand conspiracy to commit human trafficking and sex crimes is the allegation that donations were used to fund lavish lifestyles, not just of Kibaloy, but also of church officials. Is that correct, Steve?
Yes, that was the original January 2020 indictment, that they would recruit these church members, bring them to the U.S. on either a bogus sham marriage, a fake student visa, and they would get them to go out into communities and solicit money. They would have pamphlets. We'd actually see them at the mall sometimes. Weren't quite sure who they were or, you know, what they were doing for charity-wise. And so that's how some of us are familiar with them. People that aren't too familiar with the church, we have seen those charities operating and, you know, just soliciting donations. So under that scheme, federal officials said that they're pretty much sent out as a syndicate, go out here, go to this mall, go to this place, get donations. And each person had a quota and they were supposed to reach certain quotas. If they did not get any quotas, they were subject to verbal harassment. They actually had their passports and their documents taken away upon their arrival. So things of that nature. So they would be just harassed if they didn't reach their actual quotas. And I'm not sure what the exact number they were supposed to collect, but everyone was kind of on a mission to just collect for the church, which they said did not really go to the charities, but rather straight to the pockets of the officials.
Again, these are all allegations, and we have to tell our viewers that we have reached out to Pastor Kibuloy and his legal team, and they have yet to respond to our request for interview. All that we got was that they will hold off on any interviews for now until an official statement is released. From there, we're going to have to thank you now. Steve Angelus there, coming to us live via Zoom from LA. We appreciate you, Steve, for joining us today. Steve, of course, has been following this case since 2014. Thanks again, Steve. For joining us this afternoon. Really appreciate it. And for those of you who do want to know more about this latest indictment, as well as the past cases, you can very well go to abscbnnews.com. There's an extensive collection of articles right there regarding this case and the past cases as well. All right, from there, we move on with... A leading expert in the tracing of the evolution of viruses believes the first patient who contracted COVID-19 was a vendor in a Wuhan market. In a report on the New York Times, Dr. Michael Warobi says he pored over public accounts of early cases in China and believes the World Health Organization inquiry had most likely gotten the early chronology of the pandemic wrong. Warobi says, with half of the early cases tied to the market in Wuhan, it's difficult to argue that the outbreak didn't start there. The report published on the journal Science could revive the debate on whether the pandemic started with a spillover from a Wuhan lab. Daily COVID-19 infections in Germany reach a record high. 65,371 new cases were detected in the country Thursday. Daily infections increased by around 15,000 within 1 week. The Robert Koch Institute for Infectious Diseases warns a very bad Christmas awaits if countermeasures are not implemented soon. Germany has fully vaccinated around 67% of its population. That's around 56.4 million people. The Netherlands starts a rollout of booster shots for the elderly. This comes after the country recorded more than 20,000 cases for two consecutive days. Around 85% of its population has been fully vaccinated, but cases ballooned after health measures were dropped. The country has also reimposed partial lockdowns. Meanwhile, the European Medicines Agency said it is vital to continue booster shot campaigns as cases rise all over the region.
Data with respect to the impact of boosters in real life has started to emerge, signaling that booster doses, as expected, restore protection against infection and disease in times of Delta variant dominance. The recommendation of administering a booster dose after at least 6 months from the last dose of the primary series derives from the available data that supported such interval between primary series and booster.
The Philippines logged nearly 1,300 new infections, COVID infections, I should say, Thursday. 305 more deaths and almost 2,000 recoveries were also recorded. Active cases now stand at 23,158. That's the lowest it has been since January 11th. But while the nationwide COVID tally continues to improve, one province is bucking the trend. Catanduanes was placed under alert level 4 Wednesday due to its high ICU utilization rate. The vaccination rate in the province is also low, with just 24% of its population fully inoculated.
Dahil limited lang po ang ating COVID-19 referral hospital, ang nasa Catanduanes, ano, isang provincial hospital at dalawang maliliit na private hospital lang sa ngayon. Kaya nagkaroon tayo ng... Sa ngayon po, we have 82% utilization ng hospital. Unang-una gusto ko pong ipatid sa aming alawigan at sa national government ang karagdagan na vaccine allocation para mapagpatuloy namin ang pagbakuna at ma-reach namin yung herd immunity.
The Philippines receives over a million additional Moderna COVID-19 vaccine doses. Let's get more details on the latest vaccine deliveries here in the country from our correspondent Vivian Gulia. Vivian, go ahead.
Hi, Kamina. Over 1.3 million more Moderna COVID vaccine doses procured by the national government arrived in the Philippines Friday. The vaccine shipment of 1,306,000 Moderna jabs on board China Airlines flight CI-701 landed at the Nina Aquino International Airport before 9:51 a.m. During the number of vaccine doses delivered to the country, 30.3 million of this figure, 13.9 million doses, are manufactured at Moderna. Deputy Presidential Chief Advisor, Under Secretary Isidro Purisima, who represented Vaccine Czar Secretary Carlito Gauvez Jr. at the vaccine arrival, newly delivered Moderna jabs, seeks to help ramp up the country's COVID vaccination as he encouraged the public and you to get inoculated. Of the target 77 million Filipinos, or 70% of the Philippine population, 32.9 million were fully vaccinated, while 14.9 million received their first dose. This afternoon, the country is scheduled to receive more than 2.8 million government-procured Sputnik V doses. Half of these are component 1 or for first dose, and the other half are component 2 or for second dose. Along with this, the first batch of 5,000 single-dose Sputnik V Lite donated by the Russian government.
Viv? All right, we lost Vivian Guglia there, our correspondent, who was telling us more about the latest delivery that will surely bump up the vaccination rollout here in the country, especially in the provinces. We're going to try and get Viv back on the line as soon as we can. That's about 1.3 million additional Moderna doses arriving in the country today. Right, moving on. Presidential Advisor Joey Concepcion sees the further easing of health protocols in Metro Manila by December. That's amid the high vaccination rate in the population. Concepcion says reaching the vaccination target and the continued reduction in the infection rate can result in the lowering of the alert level to 1.
But of course, we're trying to push for the economy to already open. No? We've made that sacrifice on August 8 to really push for a lockdown. From yung grupo na yan at sumali yung Metro Manila mayors. At nakita natin yung suggestion ni Octa, talagang it came to reality. Tumaas ang kaso, bumagsak dito sa October. And that's why we're seeing an early, very happy Christmas, no? With lower cases.
The Philippines may soon allow the entry of foreign travelers from countries under government's so-called green list. That's according to Tourism Secretary Bernadette Romulo Puyat. She says she will meet with the country's COVID-19 task force to iron out details of this new rule. The Philippine government earlier allowed returning Filipinos from green list countries not to undergo facility-based quarantine as long as they present negative RT-PCR test results. Dozens of countries and territories are under the green list, including the U.S., China, and Saudi Arabia.
Finally, pwede na tayo mag-accept ng mga turista galing sa green list. Kasama dito ang Japan, Taiwan, Hong Kong. So ito ay pag-uusapan this afternoon yung mga details. Pero aside from balikbayans, papayagan na ang mga foreign tourists. I hope sooner than later, sana by next week, payagan na.
We're going to take a break now. Up ahead, China defends its aggression against Philippine vessels in Ayungan Shoal. More on that when we come back. You're watching Dateline Philippines here on ANC. And we're back. You're still with Dateline Philippines. Here's another look at our headlines this noon. Philippine religious leader Apollo Quiboloy indicted for sex trafficking charges in the United States. Germany's daily COVID-19 infection tally reaches a new record high. And a senator seeking a probe into the allegedly anomalous Malampaya deal of Udena Corporation. Back with more news. Beijing confirms its Coast Guard blocked and fired water cannons on Philippine supply boats headed for Ayungin Shoal. But the Chinese Foreign Ministry claims Manila's boats were the ones who trespassed into Chinese waters. It adds the Chinese Coast Guard only upheld Beijing's territorial sovereignty and maritime order. Manila's top diplomat, Teodoro Loxin Jr., had condemned China's actions as illegal. He also reminded China's ambassador public vessels are covered by the Mutual Defense Treaty between the Philippines and the United States. The Ayungin Shoal is within the Philippines' 200 nautical mile exclusive economic zone. National Security Advisor Hermogenes Esperon, meanwhile, raised concern over what he says is the unusually large number of Chinese maritime militia in Ayungin Shoal and Pagasa Island this past week. Also speaking up on the latest clash between Manila and Beijing, a former member of the United Nations arbitration panel that invalidated Beijing's expansive claims over the South China Sea, Rudiger Wolfram, urges all states in the nation to sit down and seek ways to ease tensions. In a forum organized by the Philippine Foreign Affairs Department and the German embassy, Wolfram advised Manila against filing a new or supplementary case amid China's defiance of the 2016 arbitral award. He instead urged the country to go for diplomatic efforts.
Whoever will take the lead should ask for establishing such a round team to seek ways out of this growing tension which is existing in the South China Sea. One should first exhaust all efforts of all states of this region to come to a consensual agreement before even considering a new case. A new case would only aggravate probably the situation and would lead at the end of the day to nothing.
Senator Rizzo Antiveros urging the Blue Ribbon Committee to probe Udena Corporation's Malampaya deal. This after the firm, led by Davao businessman Dennis Uy, acquired a 90% stake in Malampaya after buying 45% from Chevron and another 45% from Shell for almost $500 million. Antiveros calls the deal alarming, as Udena now seems to have acquired almost all of the country's strategic fossil energy assets. She adds the acquisition could be disadvantageous to government and may have a negative impact on the economy. Udena Corporation on the defensive over the alleged questionable sale of shares in the Malampaya project. Udena Corporation President Raimundo Escalona says the issues thrown against them are politically motivated and baseless. Escalona says both Chevron and Shell are international oil and gas firms that cannot be swayed by a mere call from Udena CEO Dennis Uy.
If you don't have all of the facts of the matter at hand, I urge you, I really urge you to try to really find out all of the facts and at least give us the courtesy of the benefit of the doubt. It's really unfair. And it's already affecting my and the group's ability to be able to financially close pending transactions. It's affecting the livelihood of thousands of our employees.
Energy Secretary Alfonso Cusi and Uy are facing graft charges over the controversial deal. The complaint claims Cusi gave unwarranted benefits and advantage to Udena Corporation in the sale of Chevron's share.
All of our findings, as well as our private research, would indicate all the allegations and averments in the criminal complaint had been proven by testimony of resource persons at the Senate proceedings. It was even admitted that the Malampaya, the Udena, doesn't have any other contract of similar nature. They did not have the technical know-how on this. But you can cry about corporate revenues for one particular corporation, but we should cry for the Filipino people We should cry for the future generations.
Petitioners seeking the disqualification of the late dictator's son, Ferdinand Marcos Jr., from next year's presidential race, questioning the extension granted to him to answer their petition. The Philippine Election Commission gave Marcos until next week to respond. The petitioners say they will raise an objection before the poll body.
One thing must be stated factually. As of 18 November, when the COMELEC issued its order, there was no period left. Mm-hmm. There was no period left. The period expired on the 16th, mm-hmm. because the order, the notice, and as received by the respondent, was only good up to the 16th. Mm-hmm. There was no order before that extending anything. And so for all purposes, the 18th November 2021 order did not extend anything. There was nothing to extend. In legal parlance, the motion was moot.
Another petitioner against Marcos's presidential candidacy raises suspicion over how the Marcos camp knew their motion for an extension was granted by the COMELEC. The campaign against the return of the Marcoses and martial law or karma is wondering how the Marcos camp found out about the decision before any official announcement from the COMELEC was made. Marcos's lawyer revealed they received a week-long extension Thursday morning, whereas the poll commission's decision was only made in the afternoon.
It is really unusual, not to say the least. And what is even more unusual is that the lawyer of Marcos, Estelito Mendoza, knew about the extension even before the lawyer of the first group of petitioners was informed, and even before even the spokesperson of the COMELEC knew about it. He has a reputation of winning his cases. But he has also the reputation for, you know, doing all sorts of shenanigans to be able to win the cases.
The COMELEC also questioning the timing of the Marcos camp's announcement, which it calls a political tactic.
A lot of this is about conditioning the mind of the public. A lot of this is about propaganda. A lot of this is about sending the signal that, you know, we're doing fine and then we're going to win this case. And that's a common enough legal strategy. When he was asked for proof, his answer was, well, fairly evasive, wasn't it? Saying mm-hmm. that, you know, what's wrong with me knowing ahead of time? Mm-hmm. It's not an answer, right? This is not a reply to the question, how did you know?
President Duterte accuses one of the 2022 presidential contenders of being an illegal drug user. He did not reveal who it was, but he dropped a bunch of hints. Duterte questioned that candidate's qualifications, whom he described as a weak leader, who's only popular because of his last name.
Bakit ang Pilipino parang lokong-loko na supporting. Magtanong lang ako sa inyo, ano ang ginawa niyan? Nagdadroga yan ng cocaine ang tirada niya. And he is a very weak leader, ang character niya. Except for the name. Pero ang tatay, pero siya, anong ginawa niya? He may make twin hands down. Okay. If that is what the Filipino wants, go ahead.
President Duterte also explained why he's running for senator next year. He says he intends to teach senators the proper way to conduct legislative inquiries. Duterte has repeatedly condemned a Senate probe into his administration's pandemic spending. He has barred cabinet officials from attending the Senate hearings.
Paupuin mo ng ilang araw, tapos walang nangyari. Binabastos mo yung tao. You know, when you do that,
you issue several summons and you can only dispose one subject matter in for one witness. Hindi maganda. Kaya ako tatakbo. Kaya ako pag mag-ano, sabihin ko sila na, you know, there are rules in the Congress, but there are fundamental laws.
A pandemic task force official refutes claims he has joined the campaign team of presidential bet Manila Mayor Francisco Esco Moreno Dumagoso. Testing Chief Vince Dizon insists he is not involved in anyone's election campaign. Dizon adds he remains focused on government's overall COVID response and recovery. His statement contradicts an earlier claim by Moreno's campaign manager Lito Banayo that Dizon will eventually join them. Cebu City Mayor Edgardo Labella passed away this morning. He was 70 years old. Labella's family earlier said the mayor was hospitalized due to pneumonia. And prior to that, Labella had suffered from prostate cancer in 2009 but was cleared after an operation. Vice Mayor Michael Rama will be taking over Labella's post. World News Now, Belarusian authorities have cleared the main camps where migrants had stayed at its border with Poland in what appeared to be a major development in the migrant crisis that has spiraled into an east-west confrontation. More in this report.
Hundreds of Iraqis who'd camped for weeks in freezing conditions on the European Union's doorstep now flying back to Iraq. Organized by Baghdad, and one of several signs that the crisis between the EU and Belarus over thousands of migrants stuck on their border could finally be easing. On Thursday, the Polish government confirmed that Belarus authorities have cleared the two main camps migrants have been staying in on their border and are housing them in nearby warehouses. And not a moment too soon. This man from Iraq says that he tried to go to Lithuania with his friends, but security forces on both sides of the border treated them very badly. Another Iraqi told us his wife won't go back to Europe because she saw too many horrors on the border. One humanitarian group told Reuters that a man and woman it found had told them their one-year-old died in the forest. The Belarus government says it will agree to fly back 5,000 migrants to their home countries, but only if they agree to go voluntarily. They won't force anyone, they say. They want the European Union to take 2,000 migrants on their side. It's not clear if the EU will agree. The spokesperson for Belarus President Lukashenko says he had discussed the proposal with German Chancellor Merkel. The EU has previously said there will be no negotiation with him. And although some migrants are agreeing to go home, others are still making fresh attempts to cross the heavily guarded border. Meanwhile, Belarus media are reporting its government is no longer allowing citizens from several war-torn or troubled countries to board flights for Belarus from Uzbekistan. It includes Afghans, Iraqis, and Syrians.
A new study shows Facebook ran paid climate denial advertisements during the crucial two-week negotiations at the COP26 summit in Glasgow. As this report tells us, those ads ran just days after the social media giant pledged to crack down on climate change misinformation.
As world leaders gathered in Glasgow earlier this month for a global climate summit, Facebook's top public affairs executive said the social media giant was committed to combating global warming and pledged to crack down on misinformation about the science of climate change.
We also have a responsibility to tackle climate misinformation on our services.
But just days later, the conservative media network Newsmax ran an ad on Facebook that called man-made global warming a hoax. The ad, which had multiple versions, garnered more than 200,000 views. In another ad, conservative commentator Candace Owens wrote, quote, Apparently, we're just supposed to trust our new authoritarian government when it comes to all science, including the science on the climate crisis. And a libertarian think tank ran an ad on how, quote, modern doomsayers had been wrongly predicting climate crises for decades. Facebook, which recently changed its name to Meta, does not have a specific policy on climate misinformation in ads or unpaid posts, but it says advertisers that repeatedly post false information may face restrictions on their ability to advertise on Facebook. Asked about ads pushing climate misinformation, a company spokesperson said in a statement, quote, "While ads like these run across many platforms, Facebook offers an extra layer of transparency by requiring them to be available to the public in our ad library for up to 7 years after publication."
You guys are allowing that kind of misinformation around climate.
Just as the climate summit was kicking off, Reuters reporter Elizabeth Culliford spoke with Facebook Chief Technology Officer Mike Schrupfer about where he thought Facebook still fell short on climate issues.
Obviously, there's been concern about people sharing misinformation about climate on Facebook. There's been a huge issue of misinformation more broadly.
Schrupfer did not directly answer why Facebook had not banned all advertisements with climate misinformation, but said it, quote, didn't want people to profit over misinformation.
The U.S. asks big Asian oil buyers, including China, Japan, and India, to tap their reserves to help cool global oil prices. Details in this report.
U.S. President Joe Biden is seeking action to cool rising prices for crude. Reuters sources say Washington has asked big Asian buyers of oil to consider tapping their reserves to take the pressure off supplies. The request was reportedly aimed at countries including India, Japan, and, for the first time, China. Benchmark oil prices fell as much as 4% following the Reuters report before recovering much of the losses. Analysts say the U.S. request is a rare move that reflects frustration with OPEC. The oil producers group has rebuffed calls to increase output to cool off prices, though it has gradually reversed the record cuts to production it made last year. Now, a coordinated release involving China would mark an unprecedented challenge to OPEC. Beijing's State Reserve Bureau says it is working on releasing some reserves, but wouldn't comment on the US request. A Japanese official said that, by law, the country cannot release reserves in order to move prices. In South Korea, an official confirmed that it too had received the US request. Reuters sources say Biden and top aides have discussed a coordinated release with allies over the past few weeks, but OPEC remains resistant to big moves. It says the rebound in demand for oil could prove fragile, and says there are already signs of a surplus building up next year.
The Philippine Central Bank keeps a patient hand holding interest rates at record lows due to easing inflation. Our very own Juan de Guzman reports.
For an eighth straight rate-setting meeting, the Philippine Monetary Board kept key interest rates unchanged and at record lows as part of a vow to remain supportive of the Philippine economic recovery from the COVID-19 pandemic.
The sum of new data suggests that there remains scope to hold monetary policy settings steady amid a manageable inflation environment. The Monetary Board maintains that keeping a patient hand on the BSP's policy levers, along with the appropriate fiscal and health interventions, will keep the economic recovery more sustainable over the next few quarters.
The Philippine Central Bank also adjusted its inflation outlook for 2021 downward.
Previous policy meeting held last September, we were looking at a baseline inflation of 4.4%. With a favorable outturn of inflation in September and October recently, we're now revising that downward to 4.3%.
Everyone expected the central bank to keep rates unchanged Thursday, including BPI lead economist June Neri. Neri says it is possible the central bank won't be able to adjust interest rates for a couple of quarters because of the 2022 elections. He says this delay could be painful, especially if the United States hikes its own interest rates earlier than expected.
Our GIR is still strong, still big. Governor mentioned earlier, it's still bigger than external debt. But is it worth draining or depleting our reserves rapidly in case something like that happens to the U.S. Versus hiking by 25 basis points? And the last three elections show that there were no adjustments in the policy settings the first 5 months of a presidential election year. So if there's no hike on Thursday, there's no hike on December, that's why we're thinking, June is probably the earliest year. And unfortunately, we would have lost a lot of GIR already in the process.
Philippine Central Bank Deputy Governor Francisco Dakila, however, says politics play no role in monetary policy decisions.
Political developments are not a significant consideration in formulating monetary policy. We've always been emphasizing that the decision of the board on monetary policy is guided by the inflation outlook.
Higher interest rates are generally unpopular because these make loans less affordable. And the Duterte administration, as well as the central bank, have been trying to use low-interest loans to jumpstart economic activity.
We are coordinating also with fiscal authorities in this normalization phase so as not to unduly affect the national government's pandemic response program.
The last policy meeting for 2021 is in December, and typically there will be at least two policy meetings before May, when the elections will be held in 2022. Warren De Guzman, ABS-CBN News.
A House lawmaker urges the Philippine Competition Commission to look into the high prices of pork in Metro Manila. But Aquino Representative Stella Kimbo believes this could only be explained by a possible collusion or manipulation within the supply chain. Kimbo points out it has been 6 months since the effectivity of executive orders lowering tariffs on imported pork and increasing the volume of pork that can be imported at a lower tariff. And yet, she says prices have still not gone down significantly. The PCC says it will look into the possible anti-competitive practices at play, but so far it says it has not seen irregularities in the supply chain. In sports, the Miami Heat remain red hot as they torched the Washington Wizards 112-97. Jimmy Butler had his way against Washington, finishing with 32 points, 5 assists, and 4 steals. Fellow All-Star Bam Adebayo added 20 points as Miami improved to 11-5 this season. The Wizards dropped to 10-5. And that'll do it for today. Thanks for joining us. Thanks for keeping us company the whole week this week. If you want to revisit today's episode, Dateline Philippines Podcast is on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Play back this newscast too on ANC's YouTube channel and on ANC 24/7 on Facebook. Keep safe, you guys. Keep it here on ANC.